here. Everybody's head's up a turkey's ass. Well, lots of people have to travel to... He's not traveling, Eve snapped out. He's dug in, and he's got a target. Whoever it is isn't going to get a nice piece of pumpkin pie tomorrow. We've got protection on most of the people we know or have reason to believe may be a target. Most gives him room. And that doesn't begin to cover ones we've missed. She shoved at her hair, pulled at it in frustration. He's a frigging amateur, Peabody. He shouldn't have gotten through the first day, and instead, he's had almost a week free and clear since his first kill. Dallas, we didn't even know about the first two DBs until Monday. There was no way we could know. That's the whole thing, isn't it? He just keeps catching the breaks. We know who he is. We know how he killed every one of them, when he did it. We even know why. We have a reasonable list of possible targets. We believe we know his general area, and we can't find the son of a bitch. He has a lot of places to hide. Add the money, and it gives him more yet. Impatient, Eve shook her head. I've narrowed it down. Strongest probability to this radius. Peabody eased in, turned to the screen, blinked in surprise. You made a graph. Whatever. Highest probability area in red, secondary in blue, and so on, raying out from that core. Most likely locations within each area are highlighted on the second map, same color code. That's a lot of comp work. So? Don't kick me. It's not your strength. You'd never say it was. Eve hissed because truer words were never spoken. I had to break down and take a damn blocker because generating this gave me a pisser of a headache. I could have helped you with it. I gave you assignments. Speaking of which... No hit on any sports tickets yet. The sales rep I talked to said a lot of the venues offer sales on tickets, including the big ones, on Black Friday. That's the day after Thanksgiving and the biggest shopping day of the year. Because people are so juiced up on too much food, they feel like they have to go out and spend more money than they've got. Friday. She blew out a breath. Hit it again on Friday. Nothing on the arcade or the bar, not yet, Peabody continued. But I talked to security in both places, and they're on the lookout. I had uniforms start distributing the images, his, the morph, the droid, throughout the target area. Markets, shops, restaurants. They're pushing them on building supers, managers. It's going to take time to hit every location, but the word's out, Dallas. We've got literally hundreds of eyes looking for him now. More like thousands. Someone's going to spot him and call it in. And the tip line? Not as much as I figured, but that's probably because people are heading out of town, or dealing with out-of-towners, or shopping for what they forgot to get for tomorrow like that. Disgusted, Eve slumped in her chair. I hate holidays. Well, it's kind of unavoidable, and again, don't kick me, but you really ought to think about going home and dealing with your own out-of-towners. What? Dallas, it's already nearly an hour past end of shift. What? She repeated and looked at the time. Damn it, damn it, damn it! I'm just the messenger, Peabody reminded her, as she took a cautious step out of range. But Feeney had to take off. He's going to try to get some work in at home. So am I and McNabb and Callender. Rourke's already home, and I know he's connected with Feeney a few times. Eve dragged her hands through her hair, then shoved them in her pockets. Go home. I'm going to copy this graph thing, send it to you, to everyone. Take a look at it more carefully. If something pops for you, let me know. You haven't managed to contact all the managers in all the hotels, apartments, condos yet. No. I'll take a share of them. I'll earmark yours. Peabody smiled. How about I do you a favor? I'll earmark yours. Traffic's gonna be a cold-hearted bitch. I'll get home before you anyway. Something else to look forward to. Go home. I want you and McNabb to get to my home office tomorrow. We're going to put in some time on this, 2 hours before whenever you were supposed to come. We'll be there. We're going to get him, Dallas. Oh, yeah, we'll get him. It's just a matter of how many more he can rack up before we do, but we'll get him. She took the time to copy and send her work to Peabody, to Feeney and Rourke, to McNabb, to the commander, to Callender. Every one of them had better comp skills than she did, she admitted. Maybe they could refine, or maybe they'd see something she'd overlooked. But the simple fact was, she should already be home, dealing with the other part of her life. She put together a file bag, grabbed her coat, and headed out before she talked herself into locking her office door and pretending she didn't have another part of her life. Peabody's traffic prediction hit the bullseye. While the bitter hell of it didn't improve her mood, it did give her time to think, to make more contacts, and hit more answering services, message loops, and skeleton staffs. Out of stubbornness, as much as concern, she tried asshole Joe one more time. Maybe, just maybe, she'd wear him down and convince him to accept protection. Then she let it go when her tag went directly to V-mail. She drove through the gates, already calculating how long she'd have to socialize before she could sneak off and get back to the job. The lights exploded out of the gloom. And despite the dribbling rain, there appeared to be some sort of ball game going on over the wet, lush green grass. Men, women, kids ran around like maniacs. Most of them had stripped off jackets to play in sweaters or sweatshirts or shirt sleeves, and all were thoroughly wet and filthy. She saw the round and rugged leather ball sail. Watched someone pass it across with a leaping head strike, then someone else in a blur of bodies execute a lateral kick. She slowed to a crawl in case one of the crazed players ran across the drive, then winced a little at the ensuing ugly collision and pileup of bodies. Obviously, the game was vicious. She parked, got out, and had her ears assailed by shouting, hoots, insults, delivered with oddly musical accents in two languages. There's herself! Despite the dirt on his face, Eve recognized the boy, Sean. Sinead's grandson had, for some reason, developed an unshakable attachment to Eve. And that, even before he'd discovered a body in the woods outside his quiet village the summer before. We're losing terrible, he told her, as if they'd just spoken an hour before. Uncle Paddy cheats something fierce, and Aunt Maureen's no better come to that. Okay. You'll come on to our side. You can take the place of my cousin Fiona. She's useless as teats on a billy goat, and does nothing but squeal when the ball comes within a bleeding kilometer of her. She found herself flattered on some strange level that he'd assume she could save the game for his side, but... Can't do it, kid. I don't even know how it's played. He laughed, then goggled. Is that the truth, then? How can you not know how to football? Over here it's soccer, sort of. But meaner, she decided, which was a point in its favor. And it's not my game. Sean! From the doorway, Sinead shouted. Leave your cousin alone, pity sakes! She hasn't so much as gotten in the door yet, and you won't let her come in out of the rain. She's saying she doesn't know how to play football. Absolute shock vibrated in his voice. And she's heart-stopping serious. That's all right, then, he said kindly to Eve. I'll teach you. Damn, the kid had a way about him. If she hadn't had a killer to find, she'd have taken him up on it and enjoyed it. Appreciate it, but... She trailed off, her shock as vibrant as Sean's at her lack of essential knowledge as she saw Rourke break from the pack and walk her way. He was every bit as wet and filthy as his young cousin. Grass stains smeared the elbows of his shirt, with some blood stains mixed on the left. Light but distinct bruising colored the side of his jaw. He gave Eve a cheeky grin, then slapped a hand on Sean's shoulder. You're needed, mate. It's near do or die now. I'm off. What the fuck? Eve said the minute the boy ran off, bellowing a war cry. Don't ask. We're all but done for in any case. Taken that Fiona couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo, and Paddy and Maureen both cheat like tinkers at a fair. What are you talking about? Why would anybody hit a cow with a banjo? He only smiled. The point is, Fiona couldn't, so we'll be done soon enough. I've a report for you, and it's already on your unit, and I've got some programs running, but the sad truth of it is, it's taken all the time I said it would. Little bits, but not enough, not yet. It's there, that's certain. The clever Ms. Farnsworth slips some sort of code by him, but we don't have it yet. Okay. Any progress is good progress at this point. I've been working on something, and I've copied it to you. We'll get to it. They were shouting for him, she thought. The family he'd lived his life without. Go hit some cow in the ass with a banjo or whatever, and try not to bleed too much. He laughed, grabbed her, spun her, kissed her hard to the cheers of the players before she could struggle free and swipe at the wet and dirt he'd just transferred. God, she muttered as she strode to the house. Irishmen are crazy. She'd barely stepped in, shrugged out of her coat, when Sinead was there taking it from her and handing her a glass of wine. Welcome home, and to considerable bedlam. It's been a long day for you, from what I'm told. Can you take a minute to sit, catch your breath? Those of us who aren't outside, or off adventuring in the city, or scattered somewhere else, are in the parlour. She could escape, Eve thought. Sinead would make excuses for her. She heard laughter from the parlour, murmuring voices, the fretful cry of an infant. They were always popping out more infants, Eve thought, and she could escape all of it and close herself in with murder. And she thought of Rourke's quick grin and filthy shirt. Life, she remembered, had to be lived, even, and maybe particularly, in the middle of death. Yeah, I could sit for a while. Chapter 20. When Joe pulled out his link, saw Dallas, Lieutenant Eve on the readout, he was walking the last couple blocks to his last appointment of the day. Of the week, he thought, and looked at it as a bonus. He smirked at the readout, hit ignore. Stupid cop, he thought, trying to scare him. More trying to shove Jerry's problems on him. Maybe Jerry'd gone Whig, maybe he had. But it had nothing to do with him. Anyway, no chance at all. Shriveled Balls Reinhold worked up the guts to actually kill anybody. Or dug up the smarts. The way Joe looked at it, and the cop would too if she wasn't an idiot, somebody busted into the Reinhold place to rob him, ended up killing them. Probably did Jerry, too, or took him hostage. They got his ID, scared him into telling them about the bank accounts. And who knew the old Reinholds had that much scratch? If he'd known, he'd have worked them into buying some nice fat insurance policies. Too late now. Opportunity missed. As for nice tits Nuccio, She probably had a new boyfriend who'd gone whack on her. If she nagged the new one the way she had Jerry, it was just a given. Nagging, whining, complaining was what she'd done best, and always looked for a chance to spoil a good time. And Farnsworth? Please. The rich old bitch had been primed to be taken out. People got killed in New York every day, for God's sake. It was just part of the urban experience. You had to be smart, take care of yourself, and watch your ass. Simple as that. Better yet, get yourself enough scratch, which he was working on, to get yourself into a frosty penthouse with doormen, cams, and all kinds of mag-ass security shit. Maybe a driver and a bodyguard. The kind who watched your back when you took some fine piece of ass to the slickest club in the city. Yeah, he was working on that. And when his great-grandmother finally croaked, which couldn't be soon enough, he stood to inherit a decent little pile. The old hag hoarded money like a starving man hoarded bread or whatever. He'd take the little pile and head back to Vegas. He'd hit for 8 big the last time, close to 10 when you added in the smaller wins. He'd hit for more next trip out. Then he'd get himself a fine and frosty place. Like this one, he decided when he reached the address. It took up a freaking block, maybe more, and it shone in the lowering gloom of the rainy fall evening. The droid's instructions had been very specific, and Joe figured a man who used a droid as an assistant was picky and paranoid. Fine with him. He'd done a quick check on Anton Trevor, and the picky, paranoid future client was rolling in it. The guy wanted to discuss business on his own turf? No problem. The client was always right, even the fuckheads. He wanted to revamp his insurance and possibly discuss a position with his firm. I'm all over that, Joe thought. About damn time he started rubbing elbows with the real movers, the real shakers. If this went as well as he planned, he'd buy himself and his date a bottle of champagne, toss a little of his Vegas winnings around to celebrate. Today, he thought, might just be the first day of his real life. As instructed, he coded in the number the droid had given him, and the droid answered immediately. Answering for Mr. Trevor? Yeah, hey, Joe Klein here. I'm outside the building, main entrance. Very good, Mr. Klein. Please remain there, and I will come down to escort you. No problem. While he waited, he texted his date for the evening. Might be a little late, baby. Got a big fish on the line. He checked the time before he pushed his link back in his pocket. Maybe more than a little late, figuring an hour for the meeting, more if it went really well. Then he'd need to go home, shower, change, get buffed for the night. She'd wait, he thought with a smirk. People were going to get used to waiting for Joe Klein. He spotted the droid, moved forward. Mr. Klein. Yeah. Please put these on. The droid handed him a hat and a pair of dark sunshades. What for, man? Mr. Trevor prefers to keep his business and his visitors private, even from building security. Whatever. Amused, Joe put on the hat, the shades, and went inside with the droid. The place had everything. Totally upscale. Moving maps, fancy to the alt shops, women with fuckable bodies, men who looked important without trying. The droid led the way through, stopped at a short bank of silver-fronted elevators, then stood for a scan before using a swipe card, then a manual code. That's a lot of lockdown for an elevator. Private elevator. Limited access. Joe stepped in. Silver walls. Even a black leather bench and a pot of white flowers. In a friggin' elevator. Yeah, this was his life. A preview. Once again, the droid swiped, keyed in, submitted to a scan. So, what's the boss like? Joe asked as the elevator rose without a sound. Mr. Trevor is very particular and very private. He looks forward to your arrival. Excellent. Joe patted his briefcase. I've got a lot to show him. They stepped off into a wide private foyer. More flowers, a mural of the city painted on the walls. And for a third time, the droid was scanned, used the swipe, the code, then stepped back to allow Joe to enter. He saw the view first. The wall of glass with the skyline, the lights, the scope of wealth behind it. He began to smile as the door clicked shut. The lock snicked behind him. Then he frowned, noting the clear plastic covering the glossy floor of the spacious living room. What? He's just moving in? You could say that, Reinhold commented, and choking up some on the bat, swung it hard. Eve sat with the relatives, as she collectively thought of them. Mostly female here, and kids apparently considered too young to join in the war being raged outside. She liked them. How could she help it? Even if she didn't know exactly what to do with them, from the woman she couldn't quite get used to calling Granny, I mean really, how weird was that, to the fat-cheeked baby girl, assuming the pink band around her bald head meant girl, who stared at her endlessly while she sucked on one of those plug deals. Some of them did handwork, crocheting or knitting or whatever people did with balls of yarn and long needles, or had tea or wine as she did, or beer. Most chattered happily. Sinead did, not even missing a beat when one of the younger women passed her the infant who made mewling noises like a starving cat. This is the newest of us, Sinead told Eve. Keela, 7 weeks in the world. Keela wore a pink and white knit cap with a pom-pom over what was probably another bald head. She let out a distinct belch when Sinead rubbed her back. There, now, that's better now, isn't it? She's fed and dry and happy if you'd like to hold her. Rather hold a ticking homemade boomer, Eve thought, and managed an, before, thanks be to God, the front door burst open and the ragged and motley football crew charged, limped, all but crawled inside. Look at the lot of you! That came from Granny, holding court by the fire. Dirty and wet and soiling the floor you are, outside and hose off, or up to bathe, the lot of you. Not a one of you are welcome in here until you do. You as well, she added, pointing a sharp finger at Rourke. Granny! Sean sent up a protest. We left our boots at the door, and we could eat a cow right from the field where that starved. Not until you're washed. Eve saw her own escape, as everyone who'd come in began to slink off again. I'll be a minute. She dashed for it, and managed to make it to the bedroom as Rourke stripped off his sodden, ruined clothes. It was a sad and pitiful rout, he announced. I'm shamed to have been a part of it. Buck up. I'm just going to sneak into my office for a few minutes, read your report, check a couple things. It'll be dinner within the hour. If you can't make it down, I'll send your regrets. It shouldn't take longer than an hour. I'll come along myself, see what you've got before I go down. Good. She made her escape, went straight for Rourke's report. She could tell he'd dumbed it down to layman's terms, but it still took her time to decipher. Since they'd been able to regenerate some of the wiped data, they had the beginnings of rooting on the accounts, and she took some satisfaction there. If they had some, they'd get more. He'd included what he and the E-team agreed was part of a subcode, shadowed in with the other data. It looked like every other computer code she'd ever studied, which meant it looked incomprehensible. She brought up her map on the wall screen to keep it settled in her head while she read through other reports and went through incomings to be certain every one of the details assigned had clocked in with an A-OK. "Protection details, where we have them, are 5x5, she said when she heard Rourke come in. "I've read your report, but I don't speak geek, so some of it's lost on me. You can walk me through it, and I'll walk you through the map I've got going on." She looked over. Not Rourke, damn it. Sinead, who stood pale as glass, staring at Eve's murder board. "Hey, listen." Eve shoved up fast, moved over to block Sinead's view. "You don't need to see that. I'm coming right down." Sinead merely laid a hand on Eve's arm, shifted to the side. "This boy here, for he's hardly more, is he? This is the one who did this." "Sinead, I know violence and cruelty. It was my own sister, wasn't it, who was murdered? My twin. And not a day goes by, not a day, I promise you, I don't think of my Siobhan and the loss of her. He killed his own parents, they say. His own ma and da." "That's right. And he did that to this young girl." She touched a finger to Lori Nuccio's photos, before and after. "And this to a woman who was his teacher. I know of this as I follow what you do, and it was only one of the reasons why I was so proud today to see you and our Rourke honored. And now..." "You don't need to explain." Again, Sinead touched her arm. "Do you wonder ever what makes a person capable of taking a life when there's no threat to his own or another? What makes them end life? And so often, so very often, with real cruelty, even with pleasure." "Every day. Sometimes finding out why matters. Sometimes it doesn't mean a thing." "Oh no, I'm thinking it matters always." Voice and gaze steady, Sinead angled to look at Eve. "And matters to you. How could you face this day after day, year after year, unless it mattered?" "I was so proud today, and thought I could never be prouder of the pair of you. But I am now. Seeing this, I am prouder yet." She took a long breath. "You'd have found him, Patrick Rourke, for taking the life of our Siobhan. You'd have found him. And seeing him pay for it. I'd have tried. No one ever did, you see, and that was hard and bitter. We needed someone to try." On another long, slow breath, she pushed back her gilded red hair. "I can tell you from one who never found that justice. It's needed. When someone did for him, left him dead in an alley, I was glad of it, but it didn't close that awful hole inside. Time did some of it, much time and family. And then Rourke came to my door, and that gave me what I needed after all those years. I thank God for that, and him. But I'm telling you, and hope you already know, what you do beyond the law of it is needed." "Sinead." Rourke stepped up, pressed a handkerchief in her hand. "Ah, well." Sighing now, she dabbed at tears. "The world can be so dark. It's foolish to deny it, and the Irish know the dark better than some in any case. It reminds us to hold on to the light, every minute we can, and to prize it. You're a light to me." She kissed Rourke's cheeks.
Don't ever forget it.
He murmured to her in Irish, made her smile, turned to Eve. He said I showed him light when he'd expected the dark. But the fact is, we did that for each other. And I'm keeping you from where you're both needed. Don't worry about the family. We'll be fine, even grand, as Somerset's promised enough food for the army we are. We'll send up some for you, all right with that? There's nothing more, really, to do tonight, Rourke told her, glanced at Eve. No, there's not. Wherever he is, whatever he's doing, we're not going to find him and stop him tonight. Then you will tomorrow. Unless you're after telling me the entire New York City Police and Security Department is wrong about the pair of you. Let's hope not. Then come down for a bit. I find when I've a problem I can't fix or solve, doing something entirely else can help me find the way through. God knows the family is something entirely else. She took them both by the hand. And we've gifts from Ireland we're all but dying to give you. All right. Nothing more to do now, Eve reminded herself, though it stuck in her throat, burned in her gut. And still, she closed the door to the office and the murder board as she went out. Joe didn't come around as soon as Reinhold had anticipated. He'd given his old pal a good hard hit, maybe harder than he should have, considering, but all that power and fury just came boiling out. Besides, he'd wanted Joe with X's in his eyes while the droid dumped him in the sleep chair. He'd already had the droid cover the chair with plastic from one of the big rolls. It was a damn fine chair, mag leather, the real deal, and in a rich man's chocolate color. He didn't want to mess it up. He figured the sleep chair was just another inspiration. He could work on Joe as he sat, reclined, or laid fully out. The multi-positions offered so many choices. He dubbed it his kill seat and had already decided anybody he did here in his home sweet home would get to try it out. He'd been anxious to get started once he had Joe secured with rope and tape, but he hadn't thought to get any more of those wake the hell up, asshole, capsules. He considered sending the droid out for some, then opted to have it fix him dinner, then shut down. That way he could eat, then work in private. He chowed down on a double cow burger and fries, the real deal, and thought he'd never tasted anything as absolutely ultra. He watched a slasher vid while he ate, considering it research, and was about to top things off with a bowl of chocolate cookie ice cream when his guest moaned. He could wait on dessert. Time to start the main feature. He hadn't taped Joe's mouth. Reinhold had tested the soundproofing himself by strolling out into the communal hall with his own music up to blast, and hadn't heard a thing. He switched the entertainment unit to thrasher rock, but not too loud. He and Joe needed to have a conversation. Joe continued to moan. His eyes were about halfway open and glassy. A thin trail of blood out of his left ear had dried, and more matted in his hair, smeared on the plastic covering the chair. Wake up, dickwad! Reinhold punctuated the order with two hard slaps, each cracking the air and throwing Joe's head right, then left. His eyes rolled around a little, then focused on Reinhold's face. Jerry. What's going on, Jerry? God, my head. My head hurts. Aw, want a blocker? I can't move my arms. I can't. Comprehension dawned slowly, and behind it came the terror. Jerry. What are you doing? Where am I? We're hanging, man. In my new place. What do you think? Frosted extreme, right? Check the view. Roughly, he spun the chair, slamming it to a halt when it faced the wall of glass. Jerry, you gotta let me go. Come on, Chair. Stop fucking around. I'm hurt, man. You think you're hurt? Thrilled, somehow more thrilled than with any of the others, Jerry leaped in front of the chair, slapped his hands on the armrests, and soaked up the wild fear on his friend's face. We haven't even started yet. Jerry, come on, man. It's Joe. We're buds. Buds? Bending down, Reinhold snatched up a length of hose he'd had the droid cut from a reel. He lashed it across Joe's chest like a whip, got a shocked, high-pitched yelp. You think we're buds? He lashed again, hardening at Joe's scream of pain. Were we buds when you dared me to steal that candy from Schumacher's? You made me do it, you fuck! I'm sorry, I'm sorry! We were kids! How about when you gave me the wrong answers on that history test so I flunked it? Or when you screwed April Gardner when you knew I was gonna ask her out? He kept lashing as he raged, kept lashing as Joe screamed, as he cried, blubbered out pleas and apologies. He stopped to catch his breath while Joe's heaved and hitched, while tears ran down Joe's face. He'd already wet his pants, and that was his own satisfaction. Please, please, please! Fuck you! Fuck you, Joe! You made fun of me that whole summer I had to take comp science over, rubbed my face in it every day, just like you rubbed my face in it in Vegas and over Lori when she kicked me out. I didn't mean it! He sobbed it out, all but choking on his own tears. I was just fooling around. Hey, me too, Reinhold claimed, and slashed the hose against Joe's crotch. The sound Joe made was like music. Reinhold tossed the hose aside, went to get a beer and a sap. His face a pale, sickly green. His lip bleeding where he'd bitten it in pain. Joe wheeled glazed eyes toward the sap. His harsh breathing jerked his chest. Don't. Please. Please. I've been sticking up for you, Jerry. The cops are all over you, and I'm the only one taking your side. Mal and Dave, they're blabbing to that cop bitch and hunkered down with their mothers, but I've been on your side. You can ask anybody. Please. Is that so? Reinhold slapped the sap against his open palm. I swear to God. Look, you can check my link. She's been trying to tag me, that cop, that Dallas. I don't even talk to her because I'm on your side. As if interested, Reinhold took Joe's link from the counter where he'd put it, scrolled through. You've been busy. Talking to Mal, to Dave, getting tagged by the cops. And who's this one? Marjorie Mansfield? A new whore? No, a reporter. She's looking to do a story on you, on what's been happening. She tracked me down. Is that right? Reinhold smiled broadly. What did you tell her? Nothing. I wouldn't rat you, man. Never. His chest trembled in pain and fear as he struggled to speak. I told her you were innocent. You'd never have killed anybody. You were framed. That's what I said. Somebody. Reinhold swung the sap, and delight spilled through him at the snap and crunch of teeth and bone. Wrong answer, he said, and swung again. In a direct about-face from her usual position on it, Eve blessed the time difference that had most of the Irish contingent heading off to bed at a reasonable, if not early, hour. Babies and kids were hauled off first, many of them limp in sleep, as a parent tossed them over a shoulder or scooped them into arms. Others followed, bit by bit. Though she suspected some of the older kids, age or attitude, were all but camped out in the game room. But the minute it seemed reasonable, she snuck off and up to her office. Not that she hadn't enjoyed the long, noisy dinner and the people. Rourke's family was so damn likable, so funny, and so full of the bullshit they like to call blarney, it just wasn't possible to resent the time. Very much. She went straight to her comp to check on any further incomings and reports. She found plenty of both, but not much in them to add any real weight or introduce new angles. Still, she studied Peabody's refinement of the map and found some good work there. She looked up from it when Rourke stepped in. "I owe you a very big solid for the evening," he began. "No, you don't. Not only because visiting relatives are in the marriage rules, but because I just like them. And maybe it gave me some rest the brain cells time. We'll see. I'll thank you anyway." He walked over to kiss the top of her head. "I'll be putting some time in the lab yet tonight. See if something shakes loose. Even if it's a crumb, tell me. I'll do that very thing and give it as much time as I can possibly spare tomorrow. Meanwhile," as he turned to go, he stopped to study the map on screen. "You've made some changes. Peabody. I need to go through it all, but my sense is they're good changes. Hopefully the right changes. Taken down like this." With his head angled, he stepped a bit closer to the screen. "I believe I own some of those properties." "You..." "Of course you do," she said on a frustrated sigh. "Stupid brain cells. You can probably get through to the managers, the supervisors, whoever has a tenant list." "I could, yes, but even that would take some time." "Holiday, darling. Offices are closed at this hour and will be tomorrow. Some of those managers will be out of town, and accessing the data will take time. I can do it myself, but unless you have a name, I wouldn't know who I'm to look for. New tenant. The first kill wasn't planned. He wouldn't have started looking for a place, this kind of place, sooner than last Friday. Probably later than that, but we can work it from last Friday. New single male tenant. That cuts it down." "It would. I'll start something. But first I'll need a copy of the revised map, in the lab," he added, "so I can work the other program as well. I don't know how many I have in a sector that large, but it's easy enough to find out. And in a sector that large, they won't all be mine. I could, with a bit of finesse, access other tenant lists with the same criteria." She bumped against her own line, slid a toe across. "Go ahead. I'll push for a warrant. Start with your own, okay? I'll push hard and get it. I'll damn well get the warrant." "All right, then. I'll see what I can do. With or without the warrant, it'll take time. I'll wager there's easily 100 properties highlighted there. 124 buildings," she confirmed. "Whatever you can do to cut that down's a plus. And it's time we had luck swing our way. Maybe you'll hit. That would be something to be thankful for. I'll let you know when I know." Renewed, she pushed through the reports again and started adding to her notes. Chapter 21. Somewhere around 11, Reinhold's craving for onion doodles refused to be denied. Torture was hungry work. He swiped the sweat off his face. It was heavy work, too. Checked the auto chef, then cupboards. Cursed. He'd forgotten to tell the idiot droid to buy onion doodles. The AC, the pantry, the refrigerator, the chiller were all well stocked, but not a single bag of onion doodles lived among the rest. And he had to have some. He thought about rebooting the droid, having it go down to the store. The fancy food shops would be closed, but he knew there was a 24/7 market on the mezzanine level. Then he decided he could use the longer break, maybe a short stroll around, even a drink at the all-night club, also on the mezzanine. Joe was out for the count anyway, and it wasn't much fun to pound on an unconscious guy. Big effort, low reward. He'd used the hose, the sap, a mini burner, toothpicks, talk about inspiration, and the razor knife the droid had used to cut the plastic. No wonder he was hungry. He left the bloodied, burned, bleeding man unconscious and went to wash up. He sang in the shower, masturbated, sang again. He changed into fresh clothes, the new black jeans with a touch of silver stud work, a collarless shirt in strong blue, the leather jacket and boots, and he looked completely iced. He reminded himself to put crap stuff back on before he got to work again. He didn't want to mess up tight new threads. He made sure he had his swipe, his code, his spanking new ID and credit cards, and some cash in case he wanted to flash it around. He checked himself out in the mirror a final time, saw himself as dangerous, sexy, successful, and gave the fake soul patch an extra press. He'd grow one of his own soon enough, he thought, and whistling, left the apartment. He checked out the bar first. Smoky blue lights rolled over the walls, and a hollow band crashed on stage. He'd expected more of a crowd, people sexy and dangerous and successful, much like himself, but plenty of the tables and stools sat empty. Dead zone, he thought in annoyance. But since he was there, he swaggered over to the bar. He ordered a whiskey, neat, like he'd seen men do in vids. House brand, or you want a call? The broad-shouldered bartender gave him a bored look that immediately put Reinhold's back up. He tapped an imperious finger to the bar in front of him. Best you've got. You got it. He didn't take a stool, but posed against the bar. He expected people to notice him as he gave the club a cool-eyed stare. Two couples shared a table near the stage, and the women were prime. He imagined strolling over, giving them both a come-with-me jerk of the head. They would, too, he thought. They'd leave those limp dicks without a thought and scamper after him like good bitches. Do whatever he told them to do. Let him do whatever he wanted to do. And maybe he'd kill them after, just to see how it felt to do some strange. The bartender set the glass of whiskey in front of him. You want to run a tab or pay as you go? I pay as I go. With a nod, the bartender slid a small black folder across the bar. Where's the action around here? Reinhold demanded. Not much tonight. Holiday. A lot of people are out of town, or heading that way. Friday you'll see some action, and the band's live. Maybe I'll be back. He flipped the folder open, fought not to goggle at the tab. He could buy 50 goddamn brews for the one glass of whiskey. He interpreted the bartender's impassive look as a pitying smirk and wished he had his sap. Instead, he tossed down the new credit card, lifted the glass. He took a deep gulp, nearly choked. Because he felt his eyes water, he turned quickly away as if taking a longer look around. He'd never tasted whiskey before, but he was damn well sure the asshole of a bartender had cheated him, charged him for high grade, and served him crap. Oh, he'd pay for that, Reinhold promised himself. He'd make a point of seeing the asshole paid for it. He forced more of the whiskey down, just to prove he had the balls, then dashed off the signature he'd practiced off and on the last couple days. Pocketing the card, he walked out. Fucking prick, he thought. He'd meet Reaper some night very soon, and he'd see how he liked having acid poured down his throat. Desperate for anything to kill the taste of the whiskey, he pushed into the market, picked up a bag of cheese and bacon-flavored onion doodles, a favorite, a family box of spongy creams, two chunky chews, and a grape fizzy. He charged all of it, sucking on the fizzy as the droid clerk bagged the rest. Starving, he broke open the bag of onion doodles on his way back to the elevator. Munching and slurping, he headed back up. He'd take a real look around the next day, he thought, before his own Thanksgiving feast. Maybe see if the same bartender was working. Get his name. Do a little research on a future target. He found Joe still unconscious, so out even slaps didn't bring him around. No fun playing with the sleeping asshole, Reinhold decided. He took his snacks up to the bedroom. He'd watch some vids, catch some sleep, and get a good start on Joe in the morning. He had plenty left to try out on his old pal before turkey time. Rourke gave it until 1:30, coordinating with Feeney, McNabb, and Callender until after midnight. Like them, he'd meant to leave the work on auto and walk away, but he'd been too caught up. He'd seen progress, real progress, when they'd untangled the initial routing, found the shadow beneath it. But then there'd been a shadow under that. He had considerable respect for the late Ms. Farnsworth, and had she lived, would have hired her in a fingersnap in any number of positions. He'd managed to crack the initial code and felt pure satisfaction, until he'd understood she'd switched codes for the next section. Smart, he had to admit, making certain her killer didn't, likely couldn't, catch on to the pattern. And all this while she'd certainly been in terror, likely in pain. The trouble was she was so bloody good it was taking him a great deal of time. Putting back the wiped material, bite by bitter bite, and then going under it all for the message he now knew she'd left wound in it. Tomorrow, he promised himself, and gulped down a half bottle of water. By Jesus, he'd have the rest tomorrow. He set up the auto, scrubbed at his face, then went off to fetch his wife. He had little doubt she'd crashed by this time. Andy wasn't wrong. She'd laid her head on her desk, with the cat curled around the point of her elbow. He saw by the subtle jerks of her body she dreamed. Fearing a nightmare, he walked to her, spoke gently as he eased her back, then up. It's all right now. I've got you. I said I would, she muttered. Then you will, he said, shifting her into his arms. What? Her eyes opened, dark and bleary. Oh, hell. I fell out. You're entitled. You started before dawn. And if we're at it much longer, we'll go round the clock with it. I was talking to Ms. Farnsworth. He smiled a little, as the cat padded quickly ahead to reach the bedroom first. Were you now? As it happens, I was myself, in a way. What did she have to say? She's just really pissed off. And who could blame her? She put his name in it, coded through the routing. What? Her eyes went instantly alert, even as he dumped her on the bed. What? Gerald Reinhold. His name and a short statement we've untangled so far. Gerald Reinhold did this. But where's the money? What name's he using? Where, if we knew, I believe I'd have led with it. He pulled her boots off for her, heard her involuntary groan of relief. We've got a start on the routine, which is miraculous. And more so, this much of her encoded message. She didn't make it easy. Over and above the whole lot being wiped, and well wiped at that. I'm supposing she knew he wasn't a complete idiot when it comes to comp science and had to be careful about it. It's good progress, Eve, he assured her. Better than any of us who know the business expected at this point. Okay. All right. She coded in his name, pointed a finger at him. It adds weight. Though we won't need any. Weight never hurts. She switched gears. What about tenants? Moving through them. A lot of buildings, Lieutenant. And not all the data is current because of that goddamn stinking stupid holiday. Her biting tone nearly made him smile. True enough. But I was able to order a rush on my own places, and all the new tenants and or applications from new tenants will be current tomorrow, holiday or no. Thanks. I've thrown a spanner into some holidays, but it shouldn't take long, and then they can get back to their stuffing. A lot of uniforms are cursing my name. The ones on the 24/7 tip line, for sure. But it only takes one person to see him to call it in. And we'll see to all of it tomorrow. They'd both undressed as they spoke, and now crawled into bed. I don't want to go to the morgue tomorrow, Rourke. You're doing everything you can to prevent that. Yeah. She curled against him in the dark and hoped it would be enough. When her link woke her just after 5 a.m., she groped for it. Block video, she ordered, even as Rourke ordered lights on to 20%. Dallas. Lieutenant, man, I'm really sorry for the early tag. Mal. Instantly awake, she shoved up to sit. What is it? It's just, we can't find Joe. It's probably nothing, but I'm a little freaked and Ma said you should know. Okay. She flipped through the notes in her head. He had a date last night, right? Yeah, that's the thing. He was a no-show. And Pris tracked me down at like midnight, bitching me out because she figured Joe ditched her to hang with me or Dave. But I hadn't seen him or talked to him. Dave either. And she said how he'd texted her he might be a little late. He was working on some deal. But he never showed and didn't answer her texts and tags. Me and Dave, we even went over there, to Joe's place. He doesn't answer the door. Okay, Mel. She didn't need a gut check to assess a bad feeling. It shoved straight through her. Give me the name and contact of the woman he was supposed to go out with. Sure, sure. He reeled it off. The thing is, well, it wouldn't be a stretch to say he may be hooked up with somebody else. Maybe got lucky and he's at her place, wherever. And maybe he's not answering his texts and tags because he doesn't want any shit, you know? But it's scary. It's good you let me know. Any idea if he hooked up otherwise with who? Not so much. I tried some girls I know he's hooked with, but hit zero there. But he's not above taking a spin with Strange if he had the chance, so... Got it. Let me see what I can do. I'll get back to you. She clicked off, shoved at her hair in pure frustration. Asshole Joe. I got that. Knowing her and understanding, Rourke handed her coffee he'd programmed while she'd talked to Mal. Maybe he is with some Strange, but that's not what it feels like. Going to be late, working on a deal. Money and status and sex, those are his pulls. And Reinhold knows his pulls. Lure him with a business opportunity, maybe? I need to go check out Joe's place. I know it. I'll go with you. I can use you better right here. If I find him, or if I don't, either way, whatever you pull out of those computers is going to help the most. He'd have argued if he hadn't agreed with her. I'll concede to that, if you agree not to go alone. And she'd have argued if she hadn't seen the solid sense in the deal. No time for bullshit, she reminded herself. I'll take a couple uniforms along. And I'm going to wake up our APA. Have Rio get me a warrant. I need to be able to go in. If he's not there, I'll be back inside an hour. If he's there and humping some strange, less. If he's there and dead, I'll be longer. And if Reinhold's with him, I'll be grateful. It took under an hour, because traffic was non-existent, and she went in hot, and, what the hell, came back the same way. She managed to avoid the relatives when she dashed into the house and up, but she heard them. Hushed adult voices, babies crying, kids chattering. And found Rourke already at work in his comp lab. He's not there, she announced, and there's no sign of duress or violence. I had a quick conversation with the woman he stood up. She's worried now instead of pissed. And I woke McNabb, had him run a trace on asshole Joe's link. Can't trace it because it's turned off. If and when it's turned back on, we'll see. And why are your relatives up and swarming around at barely 6 in the morning? Middle of the morning in Ireland, he reminded her. And that doesn't address the fact many of them are farmers who'd be up at 6 in any case. I'm getting somewhere here, and might have better luck if you stop talking. She narrowed her eyes at him, but stopped talking long enough to program more coffee. Reinhold's got him. Rourke turned away from his work. Impatience simmered inside him. He knew he was close to something, but he could see clearly the stress on her face. Men will grab strange, darling, with the smallest provocation. Yeah, pigs. But he had reservations at a hotspot, which he never canceled or used. I woke up the manager at the restaurant for that one. She was not pleased. He left work bragging about a potential new client, a rich one. I woke up his boss for that. He was okay with it. And I've got McNabb going in to check asshole's work comp and link in case there's something on there about the new client. But you think Reinhold, the new client, tagged asshole Joe on his personal link, so no record there. And if asshole Joe did any checking, he also did that on his personal PPC. That's just what I think. But McNabb, who damn well better be okay with it, will make sure. He's not dead yet. It wasn't a question, Rourke noted. Not even a supposition. She said it with absolute certainty. Because he'd want to prolong the power and excitement. And the pain. He's added time with each kill. Thinking it through, sticking with logic, with pattern, she paced off the tension. From the timeline, asshole Joe probably got to the location after 1800. About then, anyway. Reinhold would want time. A day, maybe two. And he'd know, unless he's cut himself off, and I don't buy that, that today's a big holiday. That Joe would be expected somewhere. Given the notifications, the media, the investigation, when he doesn't show up today, we'd start looking. She paced around, gulping coffee. He'd enjoy that. Having Joe tucked away, herding him and watching reports on a search? We've got some time. Some hours, maybe. Maybe a day. Then that's it. He won't have enough control to stretch it longer. She looked at Rourke then. I'm gonna screw up your big family holiday. Hours, he corrected. And there's not a single person who'll be here today who doesn't value a life more than your presence at a turkey carving. Not a single person who doesn't understand what's at stake. Okay. Okay. The sheer casualness of the support lowered her guilt threshold. I'm going to go into my office. I have to keep the door shut. I don't want some kid wandering through and getting traumatized for life by my murder board. I've got Peabody coming in within an hour, and McNabb will be in as soon as he clears asshole Joe's office equipment. I told him to come straight to you. I'll be happy to have him. Rourke, as soon as you have anything I can use on new tenants, anything on that damn code, you'll be the first to know it. I'm close, he told her again. If I'm reading this right, it won't take more than an hour or two, if that. Give me some space now and some precious quiet. Yeah. She took the rest of her coffee with her. She dug in for a while, trying to retrace Joe's steps, hitting holiday disinterest from cab companies until fear of her wrath won out. If he'd taken a cab, he hadn't caught one in front of his workplace or within a block either way. She put the transit authorities on it, requesting they search their recordings on the chance he'd taken a subway. Spotting him could narrow the area. Then she tagged Mira. Rather than her usual stylish do, Mira wore her hair in a short little ponytail. The style, or lack of it, made her look younger to Eve's eyes. I'm sorry. I know it's early. It's fine. I've been up nearly an hour. I have a lot of cooking to do. You're cooking.